Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, our weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Homosexuality is outlawed in 36 African countries. It's feared, hated, and legislated against. And gay people are persecuted, murdered, and imprisoned. Activists live lives of great danger. We'll talk about some of the current cases around the continent in our debrief from a man who, while he isn't gay, is African and is an award-winning journalist. His 2008 documentary, Kenya, Sweet Home Obama, about then-candidate Obama, was aired on PBS Frontline World. It won the People's Voice Award at the Webbies. He's worked as an editor and communications director at New America Media, based in San Francisco, and is currently teaching Swahili at UC Berkeley. You can find his blog at HuffPo.com. Edwin Okongo, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to see you. So you have been writing about Uganda, which is really the core country that we talk about when we're talking about the dangers for gay people in the African continent. There are many other countries, and we'll get to those. But I wanted to start with Uganda, and the headlines have been very sensational. And this all started in 2009. Can you tell us how it began?
Yeah, Uganda has been, it was more like the other extreme. South Africa in 2006 legalized gay marriage, and then Uganda, I mean, there are 36 countries in Africa where this is illegal, but nothing really has ever been done until Uganda said, we should execute them for some of this gay, like repeat offenders and the child molesters who they classified as gay. So, and that's when really the world began to pay attention.
When they wanted to murder
exactly
gay people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would get people's attention.
Right.
Human Rights Watch, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, all of them have, and the UN,
mm-hmm.
have all come forward and spoken out against this.
And that's why it's been delayed. It hasn't been passed.
Because the world is watching you.
Exactly, because the world is watching
Uganda and everybody else.
And everybody else. And really, that's why it hasn't passed, because of this pressure from outside. And
well, in 2009, there was some sort of Congress?
Yeah,
some sort of...
It began...
Where it all
really,
erupted.
Yeah, it began really with this convention that was attended by Christians, among them U.S. evangelicals. And it's a guy named Scott Lively, who was here, a reverend here in California. And he was the keynote speaker, and he talked about how gays were taking over and they were going to corrupt kids, and they're already taken over in Brazil, and how much money they have, and we had to stand and fight them. And those were the words. And
you mean the roots of some of this disturbance, this stirring up of this creating of this hatred and fear, come from American Christian evangelicals?
Yes.
And when I say the word Christian, I hesitate a little bit.
Well, it began. It began after that is when David Bahati, who was actually a friend of Scott Lively, who is Ugandan legislator, lawmaker, who used to come here as his buddy. Yeah? After that, that's when he introduced that law, after that convention. Yeah. So the timing was, wow.
Spreading hatred throughout the world. Now, David Kato, a Ugandan teacher and gay rights activist, sometimes called the father of Uganda's gay rights movement, was brutally murdered 1 year ago in 2011. In 2012, January of 2012. And so that murder was a lightning rod as well for how frightening the mounting hatred and fear about gay people was.
Yeah, of course, this murder comes after a newspaper, this tabloid in Uganda, and lists the names of 100 top gays in the country, and his David's name, and they put pictures on the newspaper. And I mean, like any other murder, gay or not, in Africa, it's really hard to get these things investigated so they can come back and say, we didn't really find that it was gay-related. It was robbery, but mm-hmm. he was killed. And that
he was targeted.
It was targeted, and that really, again, the human rights activists came in and was like, well, now this is why it can't happen.
So it sort of serves a contrary purpose.
Right.
By waking the world up even further to the abuse and danger.
It is. That's what it did. It woke the world up that this is happening here. But what we haven't seen, and there was this Reverend Kaoma was from Zambia who attended that initial
convention
in Kampala. And he went there and he published a report about this and how he interviewed people, and they were actually referring to this white man coming to Uganda as the man of God, man of God. And there's a lot of Africans look at the white man has a lot to do with this. So there have been laws in the books for many, many years banning gay sex, gay homosexuality, mm-hmm. But it wasn't until this white man coming, the man of God, comes in and tells that this is wrong, that they started to act.
What do you attribute that to? You say, how is it that they see this white man as in a position of authority, is what you're saying?
Well, it comes from colonialism, the legacy of colonialism. Even today, like when I was a kid, when I was...
You're from Kenya.
Yeah, in Kenya. When I did well in school, they told me, you were as smart, as clever as a white man. When I went to take a shower, they say, you better come out as clean as a white man. And so it's in.
So this was the higher standard they wanted you to follow.
Exactly. Hmm. So when these people come over, and there are a lot of people who are going there, not just this evangelicals, but a lot of people just because of that, being of that race, are able to get away with a lot of things that black people wouldn't get away with.
Even after apartheid, even after South Africa has changed so much,
well,
it's still looking up to white.
Yes,
white man.
That's what we aspire to. when I told my brother, and you would think that these are the people at the law, like who haven't taken any formal Western education, who would think this way. But my brother, who graduated from a university in Kenya, when I told him that I'm teaching at Berkeley, he was like, get out of here. Are there white people in the class? because a black man shouldn't be teaching.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's so internalized.
It's internalized. It's
racism.
It's racism. And it's bad. I've been arrested in Nairobi for just getting off a wrong elevator and assaulted. The next morning I go to complain, a Canadian 18-year-old with cargo pants and sandals and a T-shirt that looks like he borrowed it from his younger brother. They're like, hello, sir, how can I help you? So that is a big, big problem. So when you have this...
They were like, hello, sir, to the Canadian kid.
Exactly.
And you meant, and you were dirt.
I was like, you're back here again? You want me to... crack your head open, true story. and we tried. I have a friend who's a professor at the University of Nairobi, and he's like, let's take a trip to observe this. We go to a supermarket, and we pay. The cashier doesn't even look at us. A white man behind us, a white family, they're like, hello, sir. Welcome. Come back
palpable.
To see again. Yes. And it's coming, and that's how we were able to be colonized, because you have, in Kenya, for example, at the peak of colonialism, there are 40,000 white people in that country, ruling a country of millions. How? Because they made us believe that they were close to God.
Closer.
Yes, closer to God.
My guest is Edwin Okongo. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. We are talking about the problems throughout the continent of Africa, all the different countries, and the laws against homosexuality and the sort of mounting crisis that's been going on since 2009. You can find Edwin at Edwin Okongo. That's Okongo. EdwinOkongo.com. You can also find out more about this issue at IGLHRC.org. That's the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. And also Kaleidoscope Trust. That's an interesting website, KaleidoscopeTrust.com, where you can actually do something about it by going to those two websites. I want to talk about this article from Ugandan Odgenga Latigo. He's a former leader of the opposition in the 8th Parliament, which was 2006 to 2011. He calls for a moderate approach, and it's, you know, basically saying we need to help and support those afflicted with homosexuality, and that's the moderate approach. What was shocking about that article that he wrote was I scrolled down to the comments below it, and I found these two things written. One person wrote, "You can hate me as much as you like. That's fine. I'm only being a son of Uganda and arguing a case for my beloved, treasured, beautiful, and pure African culture. Clean, decent, absolute, and godly culture. Our children and grandchildren have to be protected from the swirling human cesspool of Western making." And the second comment that got my attention was, "Enacting homosexuality laws is not sowing seeds of hatred. It is preserving, again, the purity of our rich African culture and protecting our children from blasphemous Philistines. We just cannot sit back and allow evil and repugnant acts of postmodernism to destroy the moral fabric of our society. Hell no."
Don't they write so well? But, man,
there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of ignorance. But it seems to me that what they're saying is that they're trying to protect something that they perceive as pure in both of those things. They use the word pure and purity. And they're afraid of what this gay thing is. They think it's going to destroy their African culture.
I mean, you heard God there. That's it, and not the God we used to pray to. As my people, like my Kisii people, believe that God speaks your language. You can never force another person to be under your God. God only helps your people, the people who speak the language. Now, when this Christian God comes in, and we hear about this and the Bible, and we read this. I mean, Akinola Archbishop Akinola, he put out a thing about how he felt about gay, which is bad, but it was quoting the Bible, and they want to read it.
It's well, they do Bible. That in this country.
Exactly. They do this in this country, but here, people can say, you know, get out of here.
We have the Constitution here.
You have a Constitution, and
that helps.
Yeah, and then a lot of people here can go. You can go online and say, oh, you have alternative sources of information. When you have one source of information,
and it's not like people have laptops and computers,
right?
Necessarily.
Mm-hmm. So there's that book, and it tells them this, and that's what they're going to defend. They've already been told that you are the flag bearer of that, the kingdom of heaven. You here on earth, you're going to be evangelical, and you do good, and you condemn those. But again, they pick and choose. They don't tell you, they don't talk about the one, don't judge. But really, it's that fear of God, that if we allow this to happen.
But isn't it also like in some of these countries, it's a matter of, in Nigeria, an anti-gay bill was introduced there in November just a few weeks ago that would put people who demonstrate same-sex public affection in jail for up to 10 years. And isn't this because Nigeria is a mess? They've had 10 years of terrorism, religious and ethnic violence, pressing socioeconomic problems. There's all kinds of problems in Nigeria, and I assume with some of these other countries as well. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like it's a distraction. It's sort of putting gay people up as a scapegoat. When in fact they're not really addressing the real problems of the country. They're sort of trying to blame the problems on gays, which, I'm sorry, but forgive me, I think they tried to blame the Jews in Germany for the economic problems.
Well,
so this is frightening.
It is frightening, and it's one thing that Christians in Nigeria and Muslims in Nigeria can agree on, and elsewhere in Kenya too. So
religion is a huge
religion
part
is
of it.
A huge part of it. So they both agree that this is, you know, gay people. It's against God. So the politicians use that instead. They're not talking about what's causing the poverty. They're not talking about the corruption. What happened to this? So if we come, this the work of God is more important than any other. And don't forget, we grow up being told that the kingdom of heaven belongs to the poor. It's like, don't worry about being wealthy here. Your kingdom is waiting. So let's work on getting to that kingdom and be happy.
Yeah,
so,
and then those virgins and are waiting on the other side too.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the gays as a society, they are polluting us. They are impeding us from going to heaven where we're going to. So that's how they look at it. Mm-hmm. But it's a scapegoat.
My guest is Edwin Okonkwo. He teaches Swahili at the University of California at Berkeley. He's a journalist, an award-winning journalist, and an educator. You can find him at edwinokonkwo.com. He's originally from Kenya. You can also find out more at iglhrc.org. That's the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and kaleidoscopetrust.com for more information on this issue. Let's talk about the activists, Edwin, some of whom have been jailed and one murdered. And others murdered, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But what is it the activists are doing, and do you think that they should be doing? I mean, how do you see the role of the activists?
Well, do you mean in Africa?
In Uganda, in Nigeria, in any of these countries we've mentioned so far.
Well, when you are in a country where the rule of law is really enforcing it, I mean, the laws in those books are beautiful. A lot of them, you look at the environment, laws about the environment, laws about, you know, people against disability. They're beautiful laws, but they're never enforced. So murder, you kill, you're supposed to be tried, but it rarely happens that way. So when you are an activist, the risk is much higher. Here in this country, for most an activist, whether you agree with him or not, he gets killed. We're going to find out. We're going to try our best to find out. Mm-hmm. Right? And even people who didn't like him are going to, no, you shouldn't kill him. Over there, it's not, it's really, there's a very low likelihood that someone will be prosecuted. So that makes it more dangerous. So I can't even.
So there's a certain lawlessness that you're describing, it seems to me.
Yes. There's law, but enforcement.
In Kenya, in Nairobi, in Nigeria, in Uganda, all these places, Malawi.
Yes. And not to fault, you know, I'm very optimistic about that continent. The thing is, what we did is we are there. We had our own systems, our own legal system. They weren't written, but we had, you know, for example, my Kisii people, they didn't have a single leader. They had a council of elders, which included women, by the way, and they would come and talk about things. And they had these superstitions: if you kill, you know, they banish you from the community, and you're no longer a Kisii. And the Kipsigis are not going to want you because you don't speak the language. Moral code that they had. And then it gets interrupted, right? And then we're fighting against each other. And then we get, quote unquote, independence. And now we have to have one guy ruling us. And a lot of us didn't get used to that.
And no constitution? Well,
there's a constitution, but it's based on the people who had been oppressing us. And really, in a lot of these countries, the white man did not really leave. He turned black. So those people who took over this country were the people who were highly educated in the Western sense. And who are they? They're the people who collaborated, the people who helped rule those countries, who worked for the colonial government. And that's really the major problem we have. So when they came in and they just continued that, there was a lot of lawlessness. And then Africans, I think we accept it's like, I'd rather be oppressed by my own than the white man. You know, at least, you know, he wants the best for me. But these laws are not followed. The culture of let's prosecute this, let's give people a chance to defend themselves, let's hold them innocent until they're proven guilty, hasn't quite sunk, you know? And that's the problem. So anybody doing work there,
because those systems are so new as well.
Exactly. And really, if you look at the Africa, this country, you know, a lot of them are like 50 years old, others way younger than 50 years old, 30 years old, you know, 20 years old. Now, you got to look at USA when it was, you know, 50 years after independence. Civil War hadn't happened. slavery was moral, you know, here. Women couldn't vote. I mean, 50 years ago, there were a lot of crazy things going on in this country. So it's not going to take, we're not saying it should take
200. Is that why you're optimistic? Because you look at the long view and you see how young these countries are.
Yes.
In terms of their own independence.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of, and there are a lot of good things happening there. I mean, when you look at Kenya, for example, at independence, my father was hired as a teacher. He only had 1 year of high school. Now, to go from that country where someone is hired because they couldn't find people to hire to be exporting teachers, Kenya, you know, you go to Southern Sudan, you go to Uganda, all these spots where there have been civil wars, there are Kenyans working there. So, and there's, I mean, you, so they, there is a lot good going on. So, and a lot of this noise is coming from these politicians who want to drive us away. But there are a lot of, that's why Kuria in Kenya was David Kuria, who attempted to run for the Senate in Kenya, became the first gay person to do so, openly gay person to do.
An AIDS activist and the first openly gay to try to run.
Uh-huh.
First openly gay person to try to run for political office outside South Africa.
Right. And that's why he could go. He was able to muster so much support because there are people who have brains in that country.
Hello.
Right? So, and unfortunately, they don't make the noise that those wackos that don't have brains make.
Yes. What about the current attitudes here in the Bay Area, in the African communities that you're in touch with? You're from Kenya. I'm sure you know a lot of Kenyans, and you must know a lot of different Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about that here in the Bay Area, what, how they perceive this story breaking worldwide.
It's almost like it's a taboo. Like, we don't really, I mean, I've been to hundreds of Kenyan events. I was also as a comedian, I'm performing and emceeing a lot.
He does weddings, people.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like the African wedding singer, only I tell jokes. But it never comes up. It's never discussed. Again, we have highly religious communities, and it just doesn't come up.
When you say religious, it's
both
Islam.
But Islam and Christians. Mostly.
Both. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so both Islam and
this is highly religious, so people don't bring it up.
They don't bring
sort
it up.
Sort of don't ask, don't tell.
Right. That is the, you nailed
which
it.
Which has also been true of the African American communities up until more recently, mm-hmm. I think, is at least from what I've understood from African American friends, is that you just don't bring it up. Everybody knows, but people don't talk about it.
Yeah, they don't talk about it. But once in a while, I'll hear someone say something just so out of, I'm like, really, you've lived in the Bay Area for 20 years and you're still talking like that? And I was in a car to LA with a friend of mine, and we're driving, and he goes, the commercial, like a radio commercial for like Kuya Eye for the straight guy comes on, and he just like goes off talking about this effing people, blah blah blah, blah. And I was like, calm down, man. What is the problem? And he starts talking about, hey, two men shouldn't be sleeping together. I was like, the show isn't even about men sleeping together.
It's
about fashion.
It's about fashion and food and fun.
So yes. There's a lot of misconceptions, if I hadn't left Africa myself, I would have been that person.
Sure. You live here.
Yeah, I've lived here, and I'm very open-minded. I went to college with people. You know, some of my best friends were.
You have gay friends.
I've been gay clubs here, and it's a birthday. It's going to be at a gay club. It's like, I'm not going there to have sex with them. I'm not going there.
And
anybody hits on me, I just say, no, I don't go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you, I mean, I've...
Well, it's ignorance, isn't it? And then fear. Those two things seem to go together.
Yeah, it's a fear. And a lot of us, we come as immigrants, not just Africans. We tend to gravitate when we are in a country where it's so foreign. We tend to gravitate towards each other.
Well, that's absolutely true of all immigrant communities throughout the history of the United States.
Exactly. And that, while that's good, it provides this comfort.
It's a little insular.
Yeah, it can insulate you from learning about mm-hmm. other people.
So what do you say or do? I mean, how did you handle that time in the car? What did you say to him?
Well, I call
Dude,
on
people.
Dude,
you need to meet some gay people.
Well, yeah, I call on people, and I tell I know a lot of great gay people, and I have a, you should come to a party. You should come to dinner at my house. You should meet, you know, and I tell them, you know, a lot of, the you know, some of them, you know, oh, Bernie Frank, you know, that congressman, he's gay. They're like, really? You know, so you point them towards gay people who are doing great things, and I try to convince them that and say, when you say that it's a lifestyle, why in on earth when anybody go into a lifestyle that could get him killed? I mean, why? And that no one has answered that
question.
Nobody
has an answer. And we have an African American president.
Right.
Half Kenyan. And we also have a president who has gotten rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, mm-hmm. made it okay to be openly gay in the military, who has come out in support of same-sex marriage or marriage equality. And so what is the reaction to, does that help your communities, your African communities, sort of grow and learn about that based on the president?
I think people pick and choose. There are some things that are, that, you know, you can't teach a dog, an old dog, new tricks, right? So you have people pick us up. I'm going to disagree with them on that internally, but I'm not going to talk anything about it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say anything. It's not going to change me because it's not a, a big issue to me. I care more that, oh, wow, is he going to go to Africa? Is he going to go? So what I want him to legislate is something that affects me as an African immigrant, mm-hmm. but those, that's an American part. And mm-hmm. a lot of us aren't really involved in politics here.
Because you're not citizens.
We are citizens, mm-hmm. a lot of, but we just really never felt a sense of belonging here. It's because to get to that citizenship, we've been through a lot of things that made us feel like we are not wanted here. So our hearts are back home, mm-hmm. right? And there are people who are citizens here and citizens back home or are permanent residents here. They don't know who their city councilman is, but they will go back home every 5 years to go vote. So that's another issue.
Edwin Okongo is my guest here on Out in the Bay. What do you think, Edwin, just wrapping this up today, what do you think is your prognosis for how you see this anti-gay violence and movement going on in various African countries? What do you see in the future?
Well, I think I monitor a lot of things online, and I see a growing number of people saying that things have changed. There is no, you know, two people being sick, you know, gay doesn't affect my life in any way. And so I see, I am very optimistic, but I'm afraid it might get worse, especially if this thing in Uganda passes before it gets better.
Thank you so much for being here and helping shine some light on African culture and African opinions and people. You're an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and I'm going to be back on the air at 9 o'clock tonight for Africa Mix.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay. My guest has been Edwin Okongo. He is at edwinokongo.com. You can also go to iglhrc.org and find out more about updates on this growing problem in the African countries. Our show is weekly. It airs every Thursday at 7 o'clock, and we archive it for podcasting and on-demand listening at outinthebay.com. It's our brand-new website. You should check it out, man. It is cool. Check out our Playing Favorites page. We put up a dozen of our best shows over the last 8 years, Ang Lee, Sylvester, John Waters, many more. So make a donation to us. It's tax-deductible. Keeps us on the air. Hey, you're the public in public radio. Come on. Cough it up. You can get us on your phone. Just go to outinthebay.com. Download that Stitcher app. Write us with your comments. Marilyn at outinthebay.com or Eric at outinthebay.com. Thanks to the staff and management of KLW. Joanne Mars, our engineer. Thanks, Joanne. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me.